Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, when you have a chance, do me a huge solid. Check us out at consumerguide.com. Be sure and check out our 2023 Best Buy list. The list is a perfect starting place if you are looking for a new car or truck. And you can download backup or stream back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, Jill Simonillo is out today. She's doing that dog race Rebel Rally thing. So we wish her luck. But in studio, Steve King and Johnny Putman, Chicago radio legends. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you,
Tom. And you
Tom.
Noticed that I wore my blonde wig to,
I did.
to play the part of Jill.
Yeah.
And I can be a rebel. I think it is a rebel rally she's on, right?
The Rebel Rally.
Oh, it's Rebel? See, because she's a rebel in my book. So
it's actually spelled with an extra E in it.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
So it's the Rebel. See, why
did my mind automatically go to the AMC Rebel?
I don't know. That's a good reference. I
mean, only you would remember the AMC.
Yeah. That was a fun car.
It was a cool car. Yeah. So how are you guys doing?
Good, good.
On a scale of 1 to 10, about an 8.5.
I'm still checking.
But the day is still young.
Yes. The day is young, and we have 55 minutes to fill here. But thank you for joining us. You guys, for people who don't know, for non-Chicagoans who have a radio show every Saturday night, tell us about that.
We do. At 9 p.m. Central Time, we are live on WGN Radio, our radio home for 3 decades now.
Yeah.
Actually, we're going.
Started there back in 1984 and as a team in 1985. So
right.
We've been there a while.
And we're on the radio until 2 o'clock in the morning, and we can be heard all over the world through the WGN Radio app because we're streaming live. And then our show is podcasted. So if you tune into something you like and say, gee, I would have liked this show, within the next 48 hours, you can catch the whole podcast.
Also, if you want to, because you're cool and radio tuned in, you can listen on AM radio for a really big area.
This is true. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Last time we checked, 38 states in parts of Canada.
Yeah.
And as we always like to say, as we move into the fall months,
when the shadows get longer,
the signal gets stronger.
Now, what is WGN Radio? One of the first radio stations in the nation, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big broadcast commercial stations. Goes to 100,000 watts at dusk?
No, has always been 50,000 watts.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Just that at nighttime, the sky waves are such that when we're down at our vacation home in Panama City Beach, Florida, it sounds like a local at night.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And the heritage radio stations, that's the radio stations with 3 call letters, your WGN, your WLS, your WSM. The interesting thing is, I think historically, those radio stations have had fans around the country because at nighttime they could mm-hmm. be heard. In fact, remember we were in Florida walking through a mall and
and Johnny laughed, and all of a sudden this couple
turns
on their heels, and they recognize Johnny's laugh, and they said, "Are you?"
And I said, "Yeah, are you Chicago?" And they go, "No, we live here, but we listen every night."
They're wow. regular listeners yeah. from Destin, Florida.
Pre-web.
That's right,
you guys
yeah.
You guys had Big Reach pre-web.
Yep, yep.
All right, I have to confess something. I made a big mistake last week.
By the way,
week.
That's my rap name, Big Reach pre-web.
That's good.
Pre-web.
Pre-web. And then you can
I like
have,
it.
Yo, homies, Big Reach pre-web in the house.
It's a mouthful. And then I could be web. You're pre-web and I could be web.
Wow. That works.
But you were about to apologize.
I
we
was.
Always like to watch you apologize. So,
well, yeah, yeah. This is a mistake I've been making for a long time. I have a very hard time getting old. And one of the things that I can't believe happened is that anything that I remember as important happened before or after 2000. Before 2000, right?
Okay.
So last week I'm talking, and I'm talking about Lexus.
Right.
Paul Harold was in studio. He was my co-host last week. And the thing about Lexus is I remember when Lexus launched,
mm-hmm.
right? Lexus, Acura, and Infiniti all
sure.
started roughly around the same time.
Yeah.
And for some reason in my head, that's 2000. But it's not. It's 1990. And Lexus' first model year was 1990. I think Infiniti was 91. And then Acura goes back to like 86, 87, something
yeah.
like that. But I can't make myself believe that something that important happened 30 years ago.
I know. It gets worse. Trust me. Yeah. You're going to go, 40 years ago? What?
Well, I just realized my buddy Bob, one of my best friends, Bob Dirks, we just realized we've known each other for 50 years.
Mm.
We met in third grade.
Well, I just went to my 50th high school reunion. And God bless them, there were some folks that looked like they lived hard the last 50 years.
I date myself by remembering that my mom and I watched Elvis Presley's first appearance, which was not the Ed Sullivan Show. It was on the Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey stage show.
Oh.
And we watched that on a 9-inch circle television. But we were high tech because that circle television had a magnifying glass on the front of it.
That so is tech.
Because the picture is so much
bigger.
The cabinet
was ginormous in wood,
yeah.
Right? This
yeah.
big piece of furniture with this dot in the middle.
There is this, it's fake as it turns out. There's this hilarious thing that was going around on the web for a while of like the first computer or something like
yeah.
that. And in this great composite of just different images from the 50s,
yeah.
there were two giant, they look like console RCA TVs that are being hung from the ceiling in the background. Like, I don't think that's how that worked.
Well, have you ever seen the movie The Desk Set with Spencer
no.
Tracy and Katharine Hepburn?
Oh, you
no.
need to watch
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. She is a reference librarian. And she's in a room with other librarians, and the walls are computers.
Oh.
Literally floor to ceiling. And so people would call up and say, you know, well, when did the XYZ car, you know, first? And then they would walk over to this wall and put in a card, and it would spit out the answer. It's really cool because that's a very old movie.
One of the craziest, and we don't need to talk about cars today. One of the craziest things like that, and I love the imagery from this film so much, is Metropolis, the
yes.
Fritz Lang
yeah.
masterpiece, 1927.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was produced in 26. And there's a scene in that where the protagonist's father, who is the mayor of the city, mm-hmm. is in his giant domed office. And there's like a ticker tape thing going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
1927.
Yes.
And they've got like video presentation of ticker tape,
that's
you know,
incredible.
Stock prices going by. And I'm like, that was really yes. future think.
But I'm also thinking about the architecture, how cool that was,
oh,
too.
Yeah. And the
how
art, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
See, I'll bring this high-tech stuff back to the cars.
Oh,
room, okay.
Thank you, Steve.
If you got
early
it.
Early high-tech. Remember, was it the Chrysler cars that had the in-dash record player?
Yes.
An actual record player with yeah. a needle. Yeah.
Yep.
Boy, and potholed streets, can you imagine?
How heavy was that needle?
I'm a little unclear on how this worked, because there was one that had an in-dash phonograph that
yeah.
you couldn't possibly use when you were driving.
Right.
And there was one you were supposed to be able to use while you were driving
mm-hmm.
that used specially made, they looked like 45s, but I think they were thicker and bigger.
Vinyl used to be thicker.
They're made out of granite.
Yeah.
And then you, Steve, we still have your...
Oh, this is my...
Still
I'm going to have to post a picture of this at some point. This is my quintessential 70s car add-on, okay? It fit over the center hump. It was a combination CB player and a Trek.
So a CB radio. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
CB radio and 8-track.
I'm trying to remember if I knew about a combination like that.
You didn't, because I had this custom made and I still have the leather carrying case for
it. You didn't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. And it's still in our basement.
Because in the late 70s and early 80s, GM products were available with factory CB radios and cassette.
Yes, yes.
And cassette. Yep. But I don't remember 8-track.
Well,
and CB.
Into the 2000s, we were still using portable CB radios to drive cross-country. And then, thanks to smartphones, you weren't getting the information you used to get on a CB radio. I mean, it saved our lives many, many times, listening as we were driving, and then we'd see, wait, things look weird up ahead. There's no truck traffic. Turn up the radio, and sure enough, they're saying, get off at the frontage road, go around the accident up. And we did that.
But my favorite story was...
Stop.
So we got off the air.
It's related to cars, really.
At 5 in the morning. And we're driving down the 1,000 miles to our vacation home in Panama City Beach. So as we're driving, we're on I-65 heading south, and a truck is right up next to us. I'm driving Johnny's, the seat cover.
Yes, as they called me.
And we hear the trucker say, hey, see that silver car? Look at that seat cover. I bet she's high maintenance.
And I I'm looking out the window going, no, I'm not. And he's saying, get on the radio.
I wanted Johnny to pick up the CB and
key
just say,
the microphone.
Yeah, but I'm worth it. But she wouldn't do it.
And I was just mortified. I'm like, I just have my hair in a bun. What makes you think I'm high maintenance?
For as non-profane as it is, seat cover sounds so offensive.
You know.
I'm not even sure why.
But then that Christmas, I got a sparkly T-shirt from my dear friends that said, high maintenance gal. I'm like, thanks.
About 10 years ago, we drove to Colorado, borrowed a minivan. Thank you, Chrysler. Borrowed a minivan, drove to Colorado. And I wanted my daughter to get the full cross-country drive treatment.
Yes.
And I thought about it, and we stopped at a truck stop, and I bought a CB radio.
Okay.
It was just a walkie-talkie
cool.
CB
radio.
Yeah.
I took like 31 AAA or AA batteries. And then I started playing the song Convoy in the car. And I couldn't make her care less. It just she didn't care. I'm like, just do this. Just every few minutes, I want you to go onto Channel 19 and go, Breaker 19 for a radio check. And nothing happened. And then super loud, some guy responds, you're coming in clear, Breaker.
And you got excited.
Yeah, I did. She was freaked out. She like threw the radio away.
I think we just took ours out of the door pocket of the car.
We were getting
it washed, and they took it out and handed it to me. Like, what's this, lady?
Ours is like a Uniden
yes,
1000.
Yes.
I don't know where it's at, but it costs a lot of money at a truck stop.
It's probably collectible, too.
Probably. Oh, I wanted to talk about, because completely on topic, the strike. Because you guys and I, we were talking just before this about how Bill Ford,
mm-hmm. yeah.
who's like the executive director of Ford or something like that, he's mm-hmm. not the CEO, but he's on the board, and he is a Ford.
Right.
Was talking today about how the strike kind of has to kind of wrap up, mm-hmm. and they've given all they can give.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because they're talking about staying competitive, and the big three, which is now the Detroit three, are saddled with more labor costs than virtually anyone else building cars in the U.S., and they've reached a very interesting tipping point here. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is what actually is being discussed in the—
But what did he say, though? He had an interesting comment about—
Yeah, I thought he had a really interesting spin because, in essence, he said it shouldn't be Ford against the labor unions.
Right.
It should be
that's a great point.
All of us against—
China.
The Chinese, the Japanese,
and Tesla.
It should be the American manufacturers against the foreign manufacturers. That was an interesting spin.
It is interesting. And one of the things, and I don't know if this is going to affect North America that much or not, but things are slowing down in China, right? The economy is slowing down a lot, and they have an awful lot of automotive manufacturing capacity that is going to go unused. But to use some of that, they started exporting electric vehicles to places like South America. A lot of cars going to Mexico from China,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are electric. But the big deal here is that they've got a leg up on electric vehicles. A lot of government support. They've got a price advantage. And there's people that want electric vehicles that are cheaper than the ones that we, the auto industry, are providing now. And you don't really want China to get too far ahead in this
right.
process.
Well, and that's why I think it was important for him to say, we need to be galvanized against. We're not the enemy. I know it sounds, you know, it sounds good on paper.
But who is that spin directed toward? Was that directed toward the average citizen to put Ford in more of a positive light? Or was it actually directed toward the union negotiators? And if so, would that spin make any difference to them?
I don't know. It's a great question, Steve. I think it's to the general public, mm-hmm. actually. Like Ford's the good guy here. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And to be honest about this, UAW workers are pretty well compensated for what they are, for what they do. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. But compared to people who are non-union, like things like cost of living adjustments and pensions and things like this, no one gets those. So, mm-hmm. It's nice to see some people getting what they're worth. That's great. But on some hands, a lot of this stuff is probably overreaching.
And isn't part of the union's position, okay, we gave up so much to help you guys
That's
survive.
True.
Now,
and you survived.
You guys are doing real well.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some of that back.
And that's one of the things. 2007, 2011, right? The industry was really in a bad place. And UAW gave up a lot. And one of the things that they gave up or allowed was the two-tier wage system, where new workers, new employees, make much less money than do existing workers. And right now it takes 8 years to get onto the top tier pay plan. So the UAW wants to abolish that. So that's one thing. The other thing they really want is there's a temp system in the auto industry, in the unionized auto industry, where temps are not paid anywhere near as much as union workers. And what the UAW would like is for those temp workers to become full paid UAW workers and not be, you know, part-time, basically. Mm-hmm. They would be paid whether they work or not. And part of the problem there, and the the makers aren't talking about this a lot, absenteeism is a huge issue. Mm. So they need this pool of workers ready to fill in.
But don't you think they also had to put in some things that they were willing to drop?
Sure.
So that they could, you know, push ahead. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we talked about, I think it was grandson Ford or great-grandson Ford that spoke.
William Clay Ford, yeah.
Yes, yes. Now, the flip side of that is a comment that came out just the other day from the president of Ford Blue.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is what he said, apparently with a straight face. We have to set a very clear limit beyond which it starts to hurt our business and starts to hurt our future, and that's not good for anybody. And I thought, you're already hurting. You know, next week their third quarter earnings are supposed to come out, and there is some talk that maybe $200 million has been lost already. What's he talking about? We need to act now so that we don't hurt ourselves. You're hurting.
Ford's doing something really interesting, too. You mentioned Ford Blue Oval. That's one of the divisions of Ford. And the other one is Model E. That's the electric division. And then there's a third one, which is Ford Commercial. And they those divisions are new, like 2-3 years ago. And that's so that they could report earnings on an EV, non-EV basis. Because they want you to know this EV thing hurts. And they want to be clear about that. And if they lose $2-3 billion on EV, they're making a lot of money on Blue Oval, which is the old gas-powered stuff, and F-150, the Mustang, stuff like that. So they really want that to be clear. But they also, they want people to know, like, we got to sacrifice to make this EV thing work.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of sacrifice, did you see the statistic that came out a couple weeks ago? It was a comparison of the pay scales of the people who run the big three with the people who run foreign manufacturers.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like ahead of, and I'm just making this up, I don't have it in front of me, but for example, head of Toyota, $7 million. Head of Ford or GM, like $50 million or something. I mean, the price difference for the CEOs in the U.S. compared to the rest of the world is crazy.
This was it's an interesting thing, but in Japan, there's a certain amount of socialism to this, almost, where CEOs of Japanese companies make something like 10 to 16 times what a base worker makes, which is a lot of money, but it's not crazy money. And I think Mary Barra, the head of GM, made $23 million last year.
Right.
So that is the difference.
And that's along with, that's not counting. What is the other thing? That she's an advisor, she gets paid
on board, as a board of director on other organizations. I'm like, you're busy. Why are you doing anything else?
She's not hurting.
Yeah.
No, it's always interesting to find out who's on what board.
Yeah.
They're making just a little extra money a year.
Real quick, talking about the earnings coming out next week, because I was curious, well, how much are they losing? So the strike has cost GM and Ford more than $500 million. And Ford is losing, I had not seen this figure until Friday, $44 million a day. A day. GM is losing $21 million a day. Now, you know, the Kentucky truck plant closed down. So the question was, all right, how profitable was that truck? Well, that truck site generated $25 billion in revenue last year, $48,000 a minute. A minute.
It's staggering.
It is.
And that is the Ford, that plant's the Ford F-250, the Expedition, and the Lincoln Navigator.
I was shocked that they went on strike. I really was. But don't you think that they were a biggie that they were keeping in their back pocket and then pulled it out and said, okay.
Especially because things seem to have slowed down.
It did.
The previous Friday, there had been no new plant.
Right.
The UAW has been closing stuff down on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
Like midday Friday, they all go play golf, and like by noon, they have to shut something down.
and oh, golly.
But they didn't do that last Friday, and then they went and shut down Louisville.
Yeah.
Which is brutal.
Yeah.
So that was a big attack. So we'll see where this goes. It's all a little bit frightening, but I think maybe the manufacturers are about as far as they can go. So if there isn't some give, this might be a very long strike.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Louisville is that the Ford truck pipeline is pretty full. So this could simmer for a little while because there is stock in line. But when that starts to run down, this is the thing I don't think people know about pickup trucks, and this is true of the F-150 and the Silverado and the Ram, is that there are so many permutations, different cab sizes,
yes,
different bed lengths, different engines, different colors, different trim packages, and like 10 different trim levels, mm-hmm, that you need a lot of inventory to meet people's demand.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And as inventory shrinks, sales shrink further. So the inventory number doesn't always make exact sense because people are buying less and less stuff. You see
right,
less and less inventory. So it's hard to make sense of the numbers, but it gets very hard to sell a lot of vehicles unless you have a lot of them in stock.
Yeah.
Which is why when you drive past like a Ram dealer, you're like, it's all Rams because mm-hmm, they need them.
Yeah, that's true. But they literally give you a book when you are shopping for a pickup because you've got all these choices to make, right?
Yeah, it's crazy how many different trim levels, and they keep adding trim yeah, levels, and they keep adding trim levels on top.
Yeah.
So,
and we haven't even talked about the spillover from the big three to the parts suppliers, which also has impacted some other manufacturers, too.
Well, this yep, domino effect.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. General Motors Canada, they did come to an agreement. They were going to shut down the St. Catharines engine plant up there, which would have stymied everything because
mm-hmm,
they make engines for a lot of different stuff. And it turned out the first General Motors plant they shut down, and I can't remember which one it was, did stamping for a bunch of other plants too. Mm-hmm. So the ripple effect, everything is really tightly wound together,
right,
and it gets ugly. But hopefully something happens soon. This isn't the fun stuff. This isn't the fun mm-hmm, auto stuff. We should be talking about other stuff. But we got to cover this stuff. The other thing, real quick, that the automakers really want, that the UAW really wants, is that the battery plants that are going up, these joint mm-hmm, ventures between General Motors and LG Chem or Ford and SK Innovations, they want the master agreement that's being worked on right now to cover those joint ventures.
Now, didn't Ford kind of say, okay, we're going to bring you into this?
I think they're all going to say that.
They're going to
eventually
have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's a big bargaining point. What's our future like as we continue to move EV? And I think that's scary. I mean, if I worked for one of the big three, I would be concerned about, especially if I'm in my 20s or 30s, and I'm thinking I'm going to work here for the next 30 years. What's our world going to be like in 30 years?
It's going to be different.
Very.
And there's going to be fewer jobs employed yes, in manufacturing automobiles.
And we're going to have to learn to live with that. But in the meantime, we're going to have to fight for what we think we can get to protect ourselves as we make these changes.
But isn't that a separate component to this? Historically, you go to work for one of the big three, that's your lifetime job.
Right.
Is that the mindset for people coming into the field these days?
Probably not, less so.
Yeah, it's not a profession, quote unquote. Yeah.
You know, one of the sad stories, too, was Janesville, Wisconsin, mm-hmm, which was a Chevrolet truck plant, the mm-hmm, Chevy and GMC, mostly medium duties, but I think they made the Suburban and Tahoe there for a while. And that was a factory town
right,
where people went and they worked there the whole time and their whole lives. They could mm-hmm, get a career out of that, and that's gone.
Well, we were on the air the night they shut it down.
Yeah.
They turned out the lights and yep, people were sitting in the parking lot and they called us on the air. It was really sad. I mean, there were tears. People were saying, this is devastating. People don't even know what the impact is going to be on our community. And yeah. It was devastating.
And a lot of people don't realize that Wisconsin used to be a pretty major hub for auto manufacturing.
Yeah, because you had AMC up there too,
yeah,
Kenosha. And then a lot of people don't remember this, and I don't remember it well. They used to build cars in Milwaukee too,
yeah,
AMC did.
Mm-hmm.
Not for very long, I think. It was mm-hmm, mostly out of Kenosha. But I think Kenosha was cranking out 200,000-300,000 units a year, something
yep,
like that, maybe a little bit more. And I don't know what Janesville did, but that was probably 200,000-300,000 as well. So
wow,
a lot of cars coming out of Wisconsin that aren't coming out of there anymore.
Yeah.
All right, we should take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about our favorite and least favorite cars. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel. Thanks for sticking around today. We are here with Steve King and Johnny Putman. Thanks for sticking around, guys.
Thank you.
It would have been weird if you walked out, though.
Yeah.
See you later. Bye.
Tom's not letting us host. I'm leaving.
I've got a whole segment to myself. I got things I can talk about.
And we should mention that you are a regular on our show. twice a month.
I just learned I'm going to be on this Saturday.
You are.
At midnight.
Yes.
So thank you for having me.
Oh, we appreciate it.
You know, I'm just going to toss it out there because I'm so darn proud of it. Tom's Tunes, my favorite thing in the whole world.
Your bump music.
Mm-hmm. You guys are letting me pick bumper music. That is so cool.
And I think it says, and in fact, people texted and said, choice of music says a whole lot about a person. Huh.
I'm trying very hard to pick things that I think are eclectic, but not weird. I'm trying to walk that line.
I'm sorry, the weird ship sailed a long time ago, Tom. That's...
I was kind of stunned by that. I was like, really? Now you're trying?
Okay, this is normally part of the show where I tell people to follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter. That's really all we need to say. I actually said favorite cars, but I really wanted to talk about best and worst cars.
Okay.
Which is sort of a different conversation, but maybe it's the same conversation. But I've owned a bunch of cars over the years, and strangely, I'm having a hard time coming up with ones I truly disliked or were truly bad. But I would like you guys to go first here.
Okay. My personal worst is going to surprise a lot of people.
Huh.
In fact, I anticipate getting some nasty emails.
Oh.
Ready?
Yeah.
74 Lotus Europa. This was the street legal version of the car that Colin Chapman won the Grand Prix with.
No, we're all just laughing at you for buying that.
You have to buy something. Like, my weirdest car isn't that weird, but you have to have a weird car.
It wasn't even his middle-aged crazy. It's one thing if you're, you know, you're going through that phase, but...
But this was a case of this car, I don't think it went for maybe 2 weeks at the outset without something going wrong with it. It spent as much time at the dealership, more time than it spent in my garage.
Right.
And the tipping point for me was the night that I was driving on the Borman, coming in to downtown Chicago, truck is in front of me, throws up a stone, smashes the windshield. 2 months to get a new windshield from England. That was the point at which I said, okay, when the windshield comes in, the car goes out.
Yes.
So this was the mid-70s. Was there actually a Lotus dealer, or was this just an importer?
This was an importer. It was a Hammond... I think it was a Hammond, either Chevy or Toyota dealership that imported the Lotus Europa.
Other people drove them and bought, because I wasn't married to him, so that's why I always stand back and go, I reformed him.
And it was...
that was crazy. You were riding on the ground. You said you could see
it was
underneath
the
semis.
The lowest car I've ever driven in mid-engine.
You could see under a semi.
You know, it handled and it had the power and blah, blah, blah. But if it would have actually lasted a month at a time for me to drive it, it might have been interesting. But no.
But if and when it worked, it was pretty cool, right?
It was fun. Although, as you're driving on Chicago's expressways in a car that low and an 18-wheeler pulls up next to you,
you could feel
just a little frail.
You could see the guts of the truck.
Oh, I was tempted to drive under the 18-wheeler at that point.
So how long did you own the Lotus Europa?
I want to say for maybe a year and a half.
Oh, that long.
Yeah.
And then you realize your neighbors were talking about you.
It was just such a disappointing experience.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool, weird-looking car. People need to look that up.
Yeah, 74 Lotus Europa.
I like the name. I think, you know, I'm big on names of
cars. The mid-engine construction makes it look a little weird. Mm-hmm. The proportions are odd.
Well, no, he's 6 foot tall. It makes it weird to think of a man sitting on the ground to drive a car.
We talked to Brandon, who'd co-hosted the show a couple of weeks ago, had a Fiat X19 for a while, if people remember that, which I think also was famously unreliable. Mm-hmm. Who knew? British sports car. but he barely fit in that car, I guess.
Huh.
But that was, do you remember the X19? Because that was a tiny, tiny little thing.
No, I don't.
It's like a 3/4 scale Fiero with sharper edges. Good looking car.
Wow, yeah.
And he said it was a blast to drive. All right, what was your worst car?
A 1973 Pontiac Le Mans. It was a lemon, but I don't think we knew much about lemons then.
It was a lemon, but you pronounced it Le Mans?
Good. So my lemon Le Mans, we didn't know about lemons. You bought it, you were stuck with it.
Yeah.
Right?
There weren't lemon laws yet.
No, and you couldn't go back and say, you gave me a car that makes terrible noise. And if you went over 30 miles an hour, the whole car whistled.
That was a Le Mans, because the Le Mans was just on General Motors midsize architecture.
Yeah.
It should have been good.
It should have been.
Yeah.
But then all the trim started curling off the car. So you're driving along, you hear a weird sound, you realize your trim is scraping up next to the car next to you. It has curled off the car. Can you imagine that? And you get out, you just grab it and rip it off the car, shove it in the trunk, keep driving. No, it was a bad car.
That's the very beginning of the malaise era.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of things were there. But, I mean, what drove the malaise era, as defined mostly by car guys, is that the power outage began. We went to unleaded gas, yes. Low compression engines, and insurance for insurance reasons.
And shoddy workmanship.
Yeah, but that was a second part of it.
Yes, yes.
The UAW would not want to look back on that right now.
Because the windows obviously did not fit snugly, so you've got this constant whistle. But the trim, you know, to me that was mortifying, to walk out in a parking lot and there it's curled off the car. I tried to glue it with fingernail glue to make the trim go back on the car.
That's not good.
Yeah. But I think it was pretty powerful, a good engine, as I recall.
Probably Pontiac 350.
Yeah.
Which is good stuff.
It is.
That deserved better. Deserved to be someplace
yes.
better.
It didn't deserve my $3,700.
I'm going to go with a particular car that my wife and I bought shortly after we got married. We got married in 93. We probably bought this car in 94. It was a 1991 Saab 9000 CD. One of the least popular vehicles Saab ever sold in the U.S., and they were a bargain used. So this car that was probably something over 30 grand, we picked up 2 years later for about, I think, 17 or 18 grand.
Wow.
Beautiful, somewhere between midsize and full size. Leather interior, dark green exterior, 16-valve V8 or four-cylinder engine. Everything about this car was fabulous. It was gorgeous. It drove well. It was quiet. It handled well. It wasn't quick, but it was just so troublesome. It was just such a bummer that this car we loved was awful. And then one day, she's trying to start the car. I think it's only got like 30, 40,000 miles on it. She can't start the car. We're trying to jump it. It's the engine spinning. We're like, what's going on here? Timing chain had broken at like 40,000 miles. It was a clearance engine, which means that the valve slammed into the pistons, our non-clearance engine, I should say, which is very expensive. And it's like, oh, no. And there was a bunch of other repairs we had to do at the time. And it was so disappointing. So disappointing to get this really wonderful car for a great price and have it suck so much. Then we got rid of it.
And we find with Saabs in our part of Florida, if you're in a Saab, people are like, whoa, what's that?
There are no dealerships
anywhere around.
A friend of ours had a Saab.
She'd come out to the parking lot. Yeah. People would be standing around going, what's that? I've never seen one of those.
That was one of those brands, too, that was big three automakers famously ruined car brands when they bought them. Mm-hmm. And Saab was picked up, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, but whenever they did, by General Motors. They started to use General Motors architecture for the stuff, and they just became Saab-looking GMs, which was a shame because Saabs were so quirky and so good.
Quirky.
In the 70s and 80s when they were doing the turbos, like they were cool cars, and they were good-looking and fun and sporty and pretty reliable.
Yeah.
You know,
except for yours.
Yeah. Well, that was later. What about a best car? Best car.
Yeah, best.
Okay, best car. Actually, I would have two, but I'll start with one, which is actually two. What? The only car that Johnny and I actually bought two versions of the same car, the Cadillac DeVille DTS.
Ah.
We had a 2001. Mm-hmm. We absolutely loved it.
With night vision.
And then we now have, and still drive with 118,000 miles, a 2005 Cadillac DeVille DTS. And this, along with night vision, this added
navigation
and some other things.
Oh, but, and also our OnStar would work. Because remember the 2001, they stopped servicing OnStar.
The old 2G system. Yeah.
Yes.
But it has been, for all the people that say, oh, you got to watch out for those North Star engines. Both of these vehicles have been really great vehicles. And we've driven back and forth from Chicago to Florida umpteen times.
So comfortable.
Just to comfortable cars, and just they do what they're supposed to do. And what more can you ask?
I don't know what the deal is with the North Star. This was Cadillac's 4.6 liter V8, and it was a really good performer, smooth. And some people have had bad luck with it, and I wonder if they were abused. I don't know.
Well, Entirely possible, because one of the things that we've done, we're real old school. 3 months, 3,000 miles, oil change.
Yeah.
Period, end of story. Don't tell me, oh, well, it can run for how many?
No, I'm 7, paying 000, for the oil change, so
sorry.
Give me one. Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference.
I had to, my daughter is not going to get an oil change, and there's no talking to her. She's away at school.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in Fort Collins, Colorado, at school. And so the last time she left for school, I went to take her car for an oil change. And the guy's like, you're 1,000 miles early. I'm like, next one's going to be 3,000 miles late. Just do it.
Reminds me of when Johnny and I were first dating. We walk out of the station.
No, I walked up to you and I said, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know who to ask, because I knew I shouldn't ask my dad because it was going to be trouble if I asked him. I said, my car is making a tick, 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 tick noise.
She takes me out. I listened. I said, when did you have your last oil change?
I said, I was supposed to do that? And then it was dry. It was tick, tick,
literally ticking. Dust inside.
He blew on the stick as he pulled it out. And it, see, I couldn't tell my dad because then I'd reap the consequences of, well, you're not responsible. But I was responsible. I just didn't know you were supposed to get an oil change.
Yep, you do. I knew a guy.
Tom, I married a sitcom.
Stop.
I knew a guy named Daryl. I worked with him years and years and years
his
ago.
Daryl?
No, just the one Daryl. And his wife, Sandy. Sandy, if you're listening, hey. But Daryl had bought a new Dodge Omni. Like, do you remember the Omni America? It was like a response to the $39.95 Yugo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think it was $59.99, whatever it was. It was a crazy good deal.
It oozed bland.
Yes, it did. But you did get a pretty good engine. The 2.2 Chrysler engine was pretty strong in that car. But Daryl believed that oil changes were a scam and that dealers were a scam and service was a scam. And you didn't need to get oil changes.
Bless his heart.
Yep. I worked with that guy for years, and his car, he never changed the oil. That engine didn't blow until 88,000 miles. So, kudos to Chrysler engineers.
Yeah.
And he never had an oil change for 88,000 miles.
And never added oil. And that engine went 88,000 miles.
Wow.
So that was a testament to Chrysler engineering.
Crazy. Yes. Well, our Bonneville, I guess it would be my favorite best car. Our Pontiac Bonneville.
Mm-hmm.
S-S-E-I.
Yeah,
92.
It's become legendary because...
Supercharged.
Mm-hmm. Supercharged, very cool, great green, which has now come back into style. I never took that car to get it washed that somebody didn't walk up to me and offer me cash money for it. I'm not kidding you. I would be standing there and somebody, if you'd like to sell your car, we've pooled our money together. We'd be happy to come up with a figure that you could live with. And I'm like, no.
And didn't they say, we'll give you the cash and then we'll drive you
home. We'll drive you home. I'm like, no.
Wow. The funny thing about that car and that engine is that engine, the roots of that engine goes back to when General Motors engines were all from a division.
Mm-hmm.
The 3800 came from Buick.
Yeah.
It was the Buick.
We had a Buick with it.
That's the first time I discovered that engine in my 78 Buick Regal.
Okay.
And
great engine.
Didn't I have it in my Pontiac SJ, a Grand Prix? And then we had it in our Sierra.
Yep.
Our Cutlass Sierra,
and
which
then
is a cool
in
car.
The old touring sedan.
So we actually shopped engine.
Wait,
we
you had an old touring sedan?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I keep spotting those on the road. Those are cool.
We loved it.
People don't know what those are.
It was a, what year? In 88.
88.
88 touring sedan. It was a great car.
Gorgeous car, too. So roomy.
That was a weird car because it was based on the 98. The Oldsmobile 98, but it had like Euro trim, which was rocker panel. They stripped off a lot of the chrome, put on rocker panel cladding and really nice wheels and tires and black sidewall tires.
Yeah.
But for a couple of years, it was its own model.
Yeah.
It wasn't a trim level. It was its own model. And I don't think people remember it. It was also kind of expensive. So there's not a lot of them out there. And I think they're kind of sought after.
And that was one of the first cars where GM was throwing in a whole lot of tech stuff.
I mean,
it had what was the system? It was the...
It had a little computer on the dash where you could, I'm going to this place and I'm leaving now. And it would tell you.
It was one of the first navigation systems.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
Your ETA would pop up there.
I still have
a computer,
In fact, if you would like it for Consumer Guide, I still have the brochure.
Oh, That would be very cool.
Okay. But we actually bought that car based on our love of that engine, the 3800 series engine.
Yeah, people, there's I just stumbled across a video, and it's funny how YouTube knows me. Like, and it just feeds me things. And one of them was a guy was rebuilding a 3800, and he was all upset because he was doing the water glass test. So it was in a car.
Okay.
He's got a water glass on the manifold on top of the engine, and it's just a little bit of vibration. Uh-huh. And he was just bemoaning the fact that the 3800 Series 1 was never as smooth as the 3800 Series 2.
Oh, wow.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We should take a break. And I'd mentioned my problem with the year 1990 earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Today's quiz is based on 1990. So you have that to look forward to. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel. I'm here with Steve King and Johnny Putman. You guys do social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then.
How can people follow you in the social ether?
Well, are you ready for this? Because didn't you just get involved with Blue Sky and Pebble?
At the moment, I'm on Blue Sky and Pebble and Post and Twitter X.
And Threads.
And Threads and Facebook.
Wow.
And Instagram.
And all the ships at sea.
Yeah. And I say, again, we've often talked about names of cars.
Uh-huh.
I think Pebble and Threads and Blue Sky are stupid names for social media.
Twitter wasn't bad.
Twitter wasn't bad
Twitter
at all.
Bad.
And you got a nice little logo.
But until Musk took over.
Make it X.
I don't know what X is. Have I told you guys this? So my Twitter page, if I'm on my desktop on Twitter on X, the tab on the page goes back and forth between X and Twitter.
Really?
It still goes back to Twitter.
Huh.
I'm like, are they planning to go? I hope they're going back.
No.
X is a terrible name.
He would have to admit having made a mistake.
And
that's not going to happen.
All right. It's quiz time, kids.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared. Today's topic is 1990 exclamation point.
Oh, no.
There's our quiz music.
Oh, geez.
All you need to do is tell me if a car model existed in 1990 in the U.S.
All we need to do is guess.
Yep.
All right.
We'll start with you, Johnny.
No.
All right. Johnny, in 1990, could you buy in the U.S. a new Suzuki Samurai?
Yes.
Steve?
I'd say yes.
You're both right. You both get a point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to keep track of score here. Steve, Johnny tied 1-1. Okay. Johnny, Steve, this question goes to you first. In 1990, could you buy a Cadillac Alante new in the U.S.?
1990. Let me think about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
I second that. No.
Yes, you could.
You could.
Yeah, the Elante was available from 1987 to 1993. One of the things I remember most about the launch of the Elante was how much Jim Mattea hated it.
This is true. And didn't we shop for one?
We came this close to buying an Elante, and the only thing that kept us from buying it is it didn't have two airbags, and we thought neither one of us is chopped liver, so no.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No two airbags.
We even talked to Cadillac at the auto show about that, and they said, oh, well, you know, the passenger, blah, blah, blah. That's all I heard.
Nobody cares about the
passenger.
I'm sorry.
To be topical, the last year of the Elante, 1993, it came with the North Star engine.
It did.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the really desirable one now.
Mm-hmm.
That car's pretty collectible. You guys remember the Airbridge?
Yeah.
Yes, when they were shipping it out to overseas to where? To have
Turin,
the body.
Turin, Italy.
And that's where the body was made, and then they, which made it even more expensive than it had been in the first place.
They called it the Air Bridge to make it sound cool.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was just expensive. All right, Johnny, the Plymouth Reliant. Could you buy a Plymouth Reliant in the U.S. in 1990?
No.
I would agree with that.
You're both correct. 89 was the last year. The Plymouth Acclaim replaced it.
You see, when he copies me, he's right. When I copy him, we're wrong.
Interesting.
Copy this.
You guys are tied 1-1.
I know.
All right.
I'm very competitive.
We have two more questions and a bonus question.
Okay.
All right. This question goes to Steve. The Toyota Cressida. Could you buy
the Cressida?
A Toyota Cressida in 1990 in the U.S.
Cressida. If you could, it would have been one of the last years. So I'll say no.
I'm going to say yes.
It was one of the last years, and you could get it.
Oh,
Johnny now has a lead. Yeah, that was the fourth gen, which is kind of a cool car.
I like the
89 to 92.
The Cressida.
Yeah, that was an inline six, kind of a cool thing in a Japanese car.
92.
All right, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good one. Chevrolet Nova. Could you buy something called a Chevrolet Nova in the U.S. in 1990?
No.
1990. No.
You could not. So, you're both correct. Johnny, you were winning with 2-1. Actually, you won. Good bonus questions only for tie-breaking. Do you guys remember?
You know how I'd love to win.
Here's the funny thing about the Nova. The last Nova was really based on the Corolla. Mm-hmm. And it was built in NUMMI. Do you guys remember NUMMI?
NUMMI, no.
NUMMI, the New United Motor Manufacturing Incorporated. That's the plant that Elon Musk bought to build Tesla. And they're still building Teslas out there in Fremont, California. But it was
I knew that sounded familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, a joint venture between General Motors and Toyota.
Hmm. And GM wasn't that one of the first joint ventures between GM and Toyota?
Yeah. It was going to be a big deal. And General Motors was going to learn all about quality.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened quite that quickly.
Because they were hard-headed.
And there was NUMMI out in California. And then, do you remember CAMI?
CAMI was at the... No.
That was Suzuki, a joint venture with Suzuki up in Ontario.
Oh.
Very weird. Johnny, you win 2-1.
Thank you.
We have a bonus question that we do just for fun.
Okay.
Today we're going to celebrate America's 48th favorite vegetable. Any guesses?
48th favorite?
48th favorite, yeah. According to Yumly.com.
Okay, I'm going to say it is the jicama.
It's the beet. Close, though.
Ooh, because it's very similar. Yeah.
So, according to Yumly.com, the beet.
I love a beet.
My wife loves beets. We had beets last night.
Pickled beets are great.
Beets are popular in dessert recipes, apparently.
Oh.
I need you to tell me which of the following is not a Yumly.com beet dessert recipe. Are you ready? Steve, you go first.
Oh, good.
I need you to find the fake beet recipe. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. Strawberry beet dessert hummus, beet crust dessert pizza, four ingredient beetroot brownies, or Smirnoff beet juice citrus dessert coolers.
I'll go with Smirnoff.
All right. You're saying that's the fake?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm going to say the pizza is a fake.
The Smirnoff's the fake.
I knew that. I just didn't want him to feel bad.
So you have the one, traditionally,
because the brownies are actually quite good. The brownies made with beets are quite good, as are brownies made with black beans.
That I believe.
Yes.
People don't know this, but black beans and red beans are used a lot in dessert items
in
Japan and Korea.
Makes them nice and moist and yummy.
Yeah, it's got a cream-like thing going on with just a little bit more texture.
Yes.
Yeah,
I made the mistake of making, you know, I frequently cooked for guests that came into the studio in the middle of the night, and I made a big old batch of brownies, and the secret ingredient was prunes.
And that was a night when the doo-wop group Stormy Weather was on the show with us.
And I don't count to see how many people eat. And
Henry Farag, the leader of Stormy Weather, he enjoyed the taste of them a lot.
He hadn't had dinner, so he had about a half a dozen.
And as they were driving back to Northwest Indiana, we got a call from them in the middle of the night saying
they were at
a truck
stop.
To stop at a truck stop because the brownies had kicked in.
We tried to make him stop, and he was like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. These things are good. I'm hungry. Yeah.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
Prunes. Prunes and Long Drives. That's a good name for a band, Prunes and Long Drives. We were going to talk, Steve, you wanted to talk real quick about Genesis and their connected services.
Yeah, the interesting story. Genesis connected services are now complimentary for new owners of 2023 or later model years. This previously had been a 3-year trial thing, but now Genesis said, nope, that's it. If you got a 23 or newer for the life of the car, you get all these connected services. And it's kind of like an OnStar-ish thing, but I was kind of surprised that they did that. Nice thing, but I was wondering, why did they do it? Are they trying to put another ingredient to say, look, we're a luxury brand, we're going to give you more than the competition? Or is it a kind of a snarky swipe at OnStar, or what do you think?
I don't know. And it's contrary to the movement in the industry. And we see that Ford and General Motors and BMW and Toyota specifically are really interested in subscription services. And they're looking to generate money after the sale on a monthly basis for these digital services. And they want to make a lot of money doing this. Mm-hmm. And Mary Barra said something like this would be a $2 or $3 billion business for them in the fairly near future. So for Genesis to back away from this and give it to the owners free is very cool, actually. And it does feel very luxury, very complimentary. The interesting thing is it's first owner only.
Right.
After that, you do have to subscribe. But that's the way that Hyundai, Genesis parent company, does their extremely long warranty. They have a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty on their vehicles. And that's first owner only. Mm-hmm. After that, I think that warranty cuts to half. But yeah, that is very cool. What are some of those services? There's enhanced navigation, some concierge stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically a lot of telematic services that you could get through OnStar. It's that kind of a deal.
Help.
You're out driving around.
You've been in an accident or you've your car has stopped and you need help, somebody to come and rescue you. I guess that's part of it too. Much like OnStar, like you said.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tom, I'm back to the manufacturers trying to eke money out of different areas. Coming from a radio background, that's where the big rub is about taking radios out of cars because and people say, well, I don't really need it. I stream. Do you know that the manufacturers make a lot of money by having that streaming service in? XM is paying them. Sirius is paying them. So they don't really have an interest in putting free over-the-air radios in because they're not making any money.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. If you can't get AM radio and eventually you can't get FM radio, you're forced to stream.
And they're making money.
And as we've talked, and obviously we have a horse in this race, but it is very important in an emergency for you to have access to your over-the-air AM radio. If the satellite services, everything else go down, you still have that AM radio to find out what the emergency situation is.
Yeah. I've heard, too, and this sounds accurate, that in the event of an emergency and something bad happens, AM radio is going to be more robust than satellite radio.
Absolutely.
In the event that something terrible happens. Hopefully something terrible never happens like that. But that is interesting. Also, what was that? I was just driving the Volkswagen Atlas, and non-electric does still have AM radio.
Right.
So that's good because Volkswagen is one of the first companies to start pulling away.
And who, along with the AM radio, what was the manufacturers? We noticed a couple people are still putting CD players in their cars.
Oh, and we were in a...
it was a Lexus, too.
Yes,
wasn't it
was. Yeah. And we actually thanked them in our road test for including a CD player in dash. You know, so you don't have to take the magazine out of your glove box to load your CDs.
My wife and I bought a 95 Volkswagen Jetta GLX, which was a love-hate car. What a delightful thing to drive, but a lot of issues with that car. But that had the 6 CD player in the trunk. The GLX had the extremely stiff suspension. So the player in the trunk, which is well after the rear wheels, which means it's moving around a lot over bumps, absolutely useless. It skipped.
They didn't think about that.
No. And also, it was hard when you were driving down the highway for Jill to get out on the roof and crawl back to the trunk and open it and
change
put the new CD
in. And she complained about it, too.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
I actually ended up building a suspension thing out of springs that I hung from underneath the rear parcel shelf.
So it would bounce?
So it sort of worked.
Yeah.
Eventually, we just filled the trunk with towels.
No.
And just placed the CD changer on top of that. But the 6 CD changer not in the car was not a great thing.
Yeah. Well, you love your music. I love that.
I do love the tunes. Also, 6 CDs, that's not a lot. Not by modern standards.
You're talking to a family that has 3 floors with walls of CDs, floor to ceiling. So I have to chuckle because I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's not a lot.
I don't want to store all my music in the cloud.
That's unfortunately where mine is. Actually, it's right here on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have time for this now. But sometimes Apple decides your music shouldn't be on your phone and moves it to the cloud. You're like, what the heck?
That was my brother hates that.
I own that.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
I bought it.
That's why I want a CD or a vinyl record. Wow.
Which I got to get the Stones album.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to get that on CD.
We just pre-ordered Dolly Parton's rock album. It's out in November.
Rockstar.
We did the pre-order because she's done some great duets with people.
Yeah.
She's with Fogerty.
That's cool.
She's Paul McCartney. Yeah.
With McCartney?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And then Sir Paul. Well, guess what we did?
I know.
We burned through an hour. Thank you guys so much for making the trip down. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for asking us.
Or trip up. This is north of Chicago. You guys are Chicago-ish.
We go out.
Out.
Yes.
Out to the suburbs.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for making that trip.
Thank you.
And your show Saturday, what time, where?
We are 9 o'clock on Saturday. This Saturday will be 10:30 because of a hockey game, Blackhawks Go Hawks.
But the normal time is 9 p.m. to 2 a.m.
And you'll join us
WGN Radio.
At midnight.
With cool music.
Yeah.
With cool music.
Weird.
That's eclectic, but not too weird.
And then there's the music that Tom brings in.
All right. Big thanks to my friends and mentor, Steve and Johnny, for joining us today. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Remember to follow Jill's Rebel Rally progress at rebelrally.com. You can go to the link that I put on the Car Stuff Podcast Facebook page. There's a link right there. That's the stuff. Let's talk more about cars again next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.